This is a CNA podcast.
Singaporeans have a long, intimate relationship with hawker food. Everyone has a favorite stall, a favorite dish, and we never shy away from queuing, sometimes for hours, to get the best bak chor mee. The hawker center is the beating heart of Singapore in so many ways. The place of many family meals, where old friends gather for morning kopi, and office crowds grab a quick bite before slogging on for the rest of the day. And yet, over the past year and a half, the very people who have fed a nation for decades and raised families on bowls of food have seen their fortunes tumble. With the pandemic nowhere near its end, people's behaviors when it comes to food have vastly changed. Now isolated, you probably order food through your phone and have it delivered under 30 minutes, often without you even meeting the food deliverer. Elderly hawkers who have done the same thing for 30, 40 years are no match for the GrabFood and FoodPandas of the world, finding it hard to digitalize despite best effort. They cook and wait, sometimes in vain, for people to come by. Today, we take a deep dive into the heart of Singapore's hawker business and what's ailing them. How rampant are these troubles and what's the way forward? Welcome to Heart on the Matter. It's Thursday, June 3rd. I'm Lin Suling, and with me are two culinary experts. KF Sito, who needs no introduction.
Hi, it is Sito here.
And founder of Hawkers United, Taobao 2020, who's also a young second-generation hawker working hard to keep others afloat. Melvin Chu.
Hi.
So my first question to you both is, it's been 3 weeks since Singapore was placed under Phase 2 heightened alert. Could you tell us what the situation is today for hawkers in this period? And what has the impact been, whether to earnings or business, compared to the circuit breaker last year? Why don't we start with you, Melvin?
I think this heightened alert is worse than the last circuit breaker. Because from the feedback of the hawkers, business is really bad. A lot of them dropped at least 50% to even 90%. If you're talking about those drink store, their business can drop about 90%.
Especially hawkers in town, where they always catered to folks working in that area or even travelers or tourists, those go down as much as 90-95%. That's why we had to take the decision to close Glutton's Bay until people are allowed out to eat again. Actually, there's a very simple reason. I was talking to a lot of hawkers and we came to the same conclusion like Melvin did. This is worse than CB, because during CB last year, people didn't know what was going on. There was no vaccine. The measures were hanging in the air. People were struggling. And when in desperate times, the first thing you do is you need food and water. And people went out to buy. And there were no delivery apps. Delivery apps were just coming on board slowly. But over the years, so many delivery apps came on board. And then during this heightened alert situation, everybody's a bit cool these days. They sit back, it's all right. It's going to be for a month. And they finger their phone to order food. And then some people just go downstairs to eat. It's too convenient to eat. So a lot of hawkers that are neither here nor there, and there's a big bunch of them who are not online, are really struggling because no one is coming out. So that is one of the effects of heightened alert.
The thing is, the situation today, it's not our first rodeo, and surely hawkers have learned a thing or two compared to when they were clueless, as you've mentioned. Is it not reasonable to expect that they would be more prepared to shift into takeaways and deliveries again as a whole?
Melvin will tell you his situation, but the bulk of the hawkers just cannot go online. The government's effort, this digital ambassador thing, was to get people to put up a QR code and to pay online. But that's not helpful. It only works if you show up, but nobody is showing up. The hawkers just refuse to go online because of the excessive cost. In the words of one hawker, I don't feel you should be paying as much as twice for my $4 or $5 curry noodle. I'd rather you come down here and my food is made fresh. That's the way to enjoy it. These are the situations. And I'm not just talking about old hawkers. There are young hawkers in this predicament because of the food culture here. Food is expected to be cheap. So they're in a conundrum.
But Melvin, way in here, I hear Sito saying that there's a challenge when it comes to going digital, and sometimes it might not be worth the trouble given the hassle. Is that the same picture that you're seeing? And maybe could you walk us through some of the common pain points?
The problem are on the elderly, because you can see that the ambassador, not all of them can speak dialects, and not all of them can understand dialects. And as we know that most of the elderly hawkers, they are actually dialect speaking. We can hardly find one who can really, really communicate with them. So another thing is a mindset problem of these elderly hawkers.
But did the Hawkers Go Digital thing didn't work for them? Wouldn't they be able to also speak Hokkien then to help them through this process?
I think if you went to a hawker that speaks a dialect and you say, "Ah, 我抽你三十八仙，你唔会用英文，我抽你三十八仙." The guy will just shut off already.
I think, Sito, you have to interpret what that means for our listeners.
It simply means everything you sell, I will take 30%. And it's so easy to say no to that. But somebody who's trying to sell a $4 item and is only trying to make 12%, at most 15%. These are not my figures. These are NEA figures. And you want them to pay 30% so that some are passing 30%. It's a no-brainer to say no.
The thing is, right, there are many food delivery platforms and some of them charge way less than the 30%. There's the AirAsia, Deliveroo, there's also FoodPanda. So surely they have choice and they can move to another one that is more competitive.
Yeah. Like the ones that we signed up for, like Chan mentioned, we signed up for, they can charge less and all that, 10%. I say that's very reasonable, 10%. But guess what? When you log into these apps that charge less, you know what? The riders don't show up because the riders rather take the more better paid delivery apps. So we gave up on the first one. Now we're looking for others. But I don't believe 30% is the way to go. It's just not right. Mm-hmm. Imagine if you're in a food court operation models, the operator takes 20 to 28%. Imagine you have to pay another 30% commissions. It goes up to 50% over. I mean, who in their right mind, before they sell, they have to wipe off 50% of their food price? That's ridiculous.
I just want to play devil's advocate a little bit more to push the point. That being said, there are subsidies now for food delivery costs over this period from the government and also defraying the cost of platform commission fees. Doesn't that go some way to help? Melvin, what do you think?
Of course, during this period of time, it will be helpful. After this period of time, majority of the hawkers, they are concerned on this issue that, okay, I sign up now. When we are back to normal, will they still continue taking 30% or will they take less commission than the 30% which they are taking now? So this is the main concern of majority of the hawkers.
I'd like to say that this problem will carry on even after this initial lockdown. Sure, a lot of people may come back out. A lot of people just won't. But these hawkers who just refuse to go online for reasons better known to themselves, like cost, will still remain offline. They will still have no access to this great digital age that we are embarking and going into. This digital divide will leave a lot of this offline folks, not just hawkers, behind.
But what do you say to people who indicate that this digital divide, this digital leap that hawkers must make is not new to most business sectors all across Singapore who have had to deal with disruption? What's your response to people who say, is this stubborn resistance?
I can say that some of the hawkers are really stubborn because we are talking about the attitude that hawkers should have. But then there are all these hawkers that we cannot blame them for not using all this type of technology because they see it as a very, very difficult thing, which they will never.
Correct.
And they cannot accept this. Their mindset is, I wanted people to come and eat my food while it's hot. So when you are doing tapao takeaway, so the food standard will drop. This is one of the concerns which the elderly hawkers have.
They are not stubborn. They are. This is a learned stubbornness. You think these hawkers are stupid? No, they are not. Their bottom line matters. If going digital means I have to give a cut to some mega companies and all that, eat into my livelihood. Like I said, it's so easy to say no. It's not about stubbornness. And Singapore, as you and I know, is the cheapest food in the world for a developed country.
Yes, I agree.
Society refuses to accept that hawker food can charge more. And then you come with some great digital leap and says, hey, they yanks their hand out with some QR code and some app that says, I want 30%. And every transaction you do, I'll take 1% or 2%.
So are you saying that given how thin margins are, that hawkers should raise their prices? Would you support an overall hike in prices, given that our food, I guess, it has been undervalued?
There is freedom in the hawker centres to charge whatever you want. But the masses just won't agree to because they're used to this. And a lot of hawkers are okay. They're okay with people walking in, eating their $3, $4 food. They can get by. But as we grow to be more and more digital with cloud kitchens and coming in, this culture of cheap, affordable food will be lost in translation. They will fade off. And the other thing I like to say is our hawker food, many of the hawker food are not made for delivery. They are not made to sit in a ride. If you are ordering something, you expect it an hour later. This food does not sit so well. There are a lot of food that are what I call just in time. They cook, you eat now. It's beautiful. That's how my food culture, that's how my great-grandparents enjoyed this. But now you can wrap them. And then you sit in a car, on a bike, on the way to you. The food changes. People may have less regard for this UNESCO class hawker food culture.
But Melvin, help us understand, if you do increase your prices, what is the impact on volume and whatnot? Do you think that your customers will accept what kind of price increase?
I always make an example. When people eat a bowl of ramen at $12, they will never make noise. Wow, it's damn cheap, it's damn good. But when they eat a bowl of bak chor mee, or food, fish bowl noodle, which are handmade, lots of labor works, and they are selling $4 and then increased by $1, $5. So everybody will start to make noise. Why that store? Well, kill people, fire, all this type of nasty comment will come now. Sorry to say that some of the attitude we our consumers have.
That's why, Melvin, I suggest you change your store name to Jinjiritsu.
I disagree with that. I really love my bak chor mee. So
Suning, this is the thing. What they're up against is mindsets. Expectancy and mindset, that's very, very hard to beat.
So none mindsets of these digit
mindsets that people do expect our local food to be cheap.
We can't compare price now and in the 80s or 90s. Everything's rising. Rental, labors, all the ingredient costs, all rising. There's no way to compare to the past. What Sito says is very right. The food of Singapore cost is very, very, very low. If we travel to most of the country, we understand that Singapore food is damn cheap.
Hawker food has fed many Singaporeans for generations. And if you raise prices, are you going to lock out some Singaporeans who cannot afford it anymore? I'm not saying that it should be dirt cheap, but what's your take on that?
That is why they don't want to go on delivery apps. Because they will know Singaporeans will not afford that. They can't afford to give that 30% more because they pass the savings back to the people.
Surely you can have one menu for food delivery and another menu for people who walk in and tapau or eat.
I think Melvin will tell you a lot of these delivery companies says you can't do that because what you see is what you get.
Basically, I can see one thing is that although we can see that all the delivery companies, they look like they are friends. In effect, they are competitors. They wanted to get more customer base for themselves. That's why they wanted the hawker to remain the selling price and they take the commission of 30%, which is very wrong. We are allowed to mark up that, then we can consider using it. Then that's up to the consumer if they want to order it.
So what's stopping you from raising the price then?
They are competitors. When they want to get more customers, of course, if the price is lower, then people will patronize more.
What's stopping Melvin is the delivery apps. They say, no, you cannot mark up your price. So what folks like Melvin and other people could do is the only delivery menu I have is the $15 one. All your $3, $4 not available for takeout. You only do your $15, $20 sets, half a duck, and so on and so forth. But not everybody can do that. Your carrot cake, I mean, how much can people pay for carrot cake, you know, or a bowl of porridge? So that's, again, the conundrum.
Melvin, you mentioned that competition is quite rife in the hawker industry. Do you think we have too many food stalls in Singapore considering also that what COVID is doing is to shift eating patterns from outside to the inside, and a lot of people will just cook.
Of course, we can see that there are more and more shopping malls, there are more and more shophouses, F&B, there are more and more kopitiam. This actually takes up a lot of percentage in the consumer. Hawkers' business is very badly affected. Not only COVID, we are talking about even 10 years back. So hawkers and business are really affected by all the so-called kopitiam, shopping mall venture into F&B.
If you ask if there are too many stores in Singapore, here's my answer. The market dictates how many stores there should be. If somebody is not doing well, they will quit. I mean, they're not dumb. If they're not doing well, they will quit. But then again, it's offset by the culture here. People are lazy. They want convenience. They want downstairs. They want around the corner. They want at every MRT. They are lazy. Anything that's more than 10, 15 minutes away, they say damn far. This beckons this culture of convenience, which use about 20 over 1,000 hawker stalls across public, private hawker centres and kopitiams. We have about 1,000, just over 1,000 kopitiam in Singapore, you know, coffee shops. So that's quite a lot. That's quite convenient. You know? So people like that. But if you want to change this, then there'll be a domino effect on the culture here.
I want to pick up about what you said, that the market supports hawkers and it depends on the markets. On the one hand, there's been all these ground-up groups like the one that you form, Melvin, and a lot more on Instagram championing these hawkers, giving them spotlight, saying we should support them. And also, of course, a lot of our Facebook followers say government too should step in to help, quote-unquote, these old people who just want to earn a living. Does that sound like supporting hawkers, though, are about charity? And does that offend both of you?
Now we're talking about government's efforts. So firstly, is which government department? Secondly, is they're so well structured. There are a lot of things fall between their structure. For example, if you talk about helping hawkers, you say, oh, NEA should come in and help. But NEA only supports the public hawker centres that pay rents to NEA directly. If you talk about food court, and you talk about all that, that is not fully under their jurisdiction, although they're all licensed NEA things. So if you want to help, which is the department that reaches out across every hawker out there? Unless it comes from way, way up there, everybody will be going, oh, not my backyard, not my backyard.
So moving on to how this could look like going forward, since COVID might be our reality, a lot of infectious disease experts have pointed out this open, shut, on-off restrictions can be our reality for a few years. I'm just wondering, Sito, are you expecting that government assistance, whether rental waivers or otherwise, will be the primary thing that keeps hawkers afloat when restrictions must come down, though, given all you've talked about, the costs and whatnot?
I think the rental waivers, yeah, I think they are kind enough, if they are kind enough to continue giving all this, we'll go on. But the thing is, you know, once I did write in directly to a very, very senior government official way up there who asked for ideas, this is what I asked. Why don't we create this culture of a block-buy culture, block-buy system, where you get people who are caught in this lockdowns and this whole year of hardships, get them to do block buys, appoint people who can go around their neighborhood, take a little bicycle or a trolley. They can send a note out to 200 families living in that one or two block. Hey, I'm heading here. I'm going to tap out the following things. Who wants in? And that guy just takes a small commission and then he buys for the whole block. It helps neighborhood, neighborliness and all that. Maybe it needs to be a ground-up thing. But if somebody up there says, hey, it's a good idea, and I encourage all the community groups and all that to form little groups, and then when a guy has a couple of hours to spare, he says, I'm going out to buy noodles, halal, Indian or whatever. Who wants to take orders? And he does it. And he collects a little token as a little markup, you know, 5% or even 10%. Hey, that would be helpful, you know. And it's green, you know, it's just around the neighborhood. There are a lot of people in every block that can find a few hours to spare every day to do this. I didn't get any feedback. So it must be seen as a bad idea to them for reasons unknown to me.
What's your take, Melvin? What do you see as the primary way of supporting hawkers if this on and off restrictions is our new reality going forward?
I support this group buy ideas also. So recently, I realized that there are quite a number of group buy hosts in Hawkers United. So I actually invited about 50 plus group buy hosts. So I get them an Excel sheet and I get them about 50 to 60 hawkers who are having very, very bad business. So I tell the group buy hosts that maybe we can try to support these hawkers who are facing problems now. It's going on now, but I don't know how good is it.
Yeah, Melvin's initiative is good. It's good. You can go online and do that. But hey, you don't need to join any group. Look at all your friends, your neighborhood chat groups and all that. Just drive to any hawker center. There are people struggling in every coffee shop, every hawker center, every food hall, food court, private or otherwise. Just go there and buy something interesting. Hey, oh, I saw this post. This person not online. Looks interesting. Hey, I'm going to buy. Who wants to take orders? And just drive there, right there or whatever and pick it up and ask your friends to come to your house, your neighbors to come to your house and pick it up. Now, this practice is prevalent in China. I saw documentaries produced by CNA. This guy, his restaurant business went bust overnight. He was doing so well. The guy was struggling and then he decided to do group buys. He bought a few hundred packets. He made money. It was the wife's idea. The stubborn husband refused to do it. Mm-hmm. And the wife had no choice because they had to make ends meet and maintain that lifestyle. And she started buying. It was an everyday, twice a day thing. Kept her busy. The money was rolling in. They were happy. So I asked, we can very easily do this. Except, I don't know why. There's no law to stop you. I don't know. People are clueless or they're lazy. I don't know. But go and reach out and help these people who are really struggling now. Not just the hawkers. Small shop retailers, they are struggling also, you know.
It sounds like, while on the one hand, there are factors that are making it more challenging for some hawkers to do well, location, I think you mentioned drink stalls also do worse, Melvin. There are indeed some things that hawkers can do, like the group buys, to make things work. Are there other instances that you have seen on how some hawkers are thriving better and what they might be doing differently?
We can see that there are some hawker centers who are really, really, they go very good hawkers neighbors. What I saw is in Yishun Park Hawker, there is this seafood soup. So he actually helped to coordinate orders for all his neighbors' store, including the green store. So we have to put our selfishness away. We need to work as a team, as a hawker, to be united and work together. If you are corporate enough, you don't be selfish. It can work, this method.
I just want to get your take. Since that COVID-19 restrictions have really changed the landscape and imposed new challenges for hawkers, there's been so much talk, even before that, about the death of hawker culture with rising rents and changing food patterns. Do you both think young people have been discouraged to take up the craft as a result?
The hawker food craft and culture is more popular than it is acceptable. People read about, wow, all these stories, more celebrities from around the world support them, they got good business, they look good and all that. But then they are turned off by the notion that you have to stand there and work very, very long hours. One, two, that you can't hire people. No Singaporeans want to do this job, even if it pays university graduate prices or polytechnic diploma holder prices. No Singaporeans want to do that. That is a given, no? And yet,
oh dear,
they are not allowed to take on foreigners who can assist Melvin, go there and wash up the shop in the morning, turn on the fire, boil some water before Melvin wake up late at 6 a.m. And slowly saunter there. Can't. Melvin has to go there, 4, 5 a.m.? And then by the time he sells his first portion in the morning, he smells like a wet rat, you know?
No, I'm sure it doesn't.
Although he has 3-4 people working, his brother, his sister, the mother, 4 of them. He doesn't even have a quota. He can meet quota to hire Malaysians or all that. But no, it's not allowed. So I think that law should change.
Yeah, I second that.
Otherwise, it will be very, very discouraging for people. Wow, why not? I'd rather be a blogger. I'd rather be an influencer. This is a soft death knell to this UNESCO class hawker culture of ours.
Oh, dear. Okay, last question to round off. Melvin, let's start with you. The question is, you've both seen many ups and downs of hawker food over the years. Hawkers have faced huge challenges. This is not new. COVID-19 is big. What keeps you optimistic about the future of hawker food in Singapore and how hawkers will emerge from all this?
I think we start with Guru first.
You have no idea how to answer, right? Okay, how will we emerge? I think the jury is out. How the whole of society comes together to support this. Whether we are really going to say, heck this, man. I'm just going to go out there, buy tapa for my family and neighbors. I'm going to support Singaporeans who keeps this heartbeat of Singapore delicious and alive. I got to go out there. So this is the solution I'm saying. Just get out there. It will help hawkers think that, hey, you help me, wow, 你支持我. I'm really appreciative of that, which keeps me going, which keeps me want to do better for that $3, $4, $5 bowl of something that I'm going to sell you every day. It's a culture thing. And then the other thing is, are people going into this trade? There isn't a proper education module. I can learn French food easily, Italian, Japanese food very easily, But you really can't learn hawker food. Nobody will teach you. There's no course out there. There's some little programs that has limited levels of success run by the government. But in the bigger scheme of things, if I want a diploma in hawker food, which is World UNESCO class, there's nothing available for me. So the jury is out. Right now, we are 1-0 down in this progression and succession thing. Melvin, what do you think?
Government did put in effort in promoting this culture. But okay, they got this mentorship program, they got this incubation program. But this is my opinion. I think we should only support and subsidize those who are really, really into our hawker culture food. Like if you are doing bak chor mee, char kway teow, char hei mee, our very, very, very comfort food, then they should support this. But don't support people doing Japanese food or all the fancy, fancy food anymore. Because if we want to continue our culture, we need to bring in new people, youngsters, to continue it. If not, in the next few years, we can see all the hawker center. We can only see mukata, Korean food, Japanese food. Then all the char kway teow, hey, where is the char kway teow? No more already.
So it proves one thing. There are young hawkers who want to come out and be a hawker for reasons behind their passion and belief. But it's not easy to get a good bak chor mee recipe. Hawkers don't know how to teach, Their way of teaching is like that. So what's like that? So what do people resort to? They go and offer YouTube recipes in a hawker store. And you don't get a lot of great char kway teow recipes out there that captures the essence of what Singaporeans know a good char kway teow to be. People are very fussy eaters, You can try a YouTube char kway teow recipe. The fellow will spit in your face and tell everybody not to go back, You don't laugh, it's true. Yeah, Singaporeans, when it comes to food, they may be, we try. But they are damn fussy. They'll quietly not support you if you don't make that mark, They don't care how sad your story is. Your char kway teow is lousy, I ain't coming back. And I'm keeping my mouth shut.
So there you have it. Fussy eaters, passionate hawkers, and the big challenges they face looking at tighter restrictions, hoping that their customers will stay loyal and return once those are lifted come June 13. You've been listening to Heart of the Matter with me, Lin Su Ling. Credit for this episode goes to Crispina Robert, our podcast editor, and research writer, Evan Lowe.